I want to mention about or explain about the years of therapy, the years of effort that I've gone through with a lot of help from all these men up here. Yeah, either directly or indirectly. My mother, at I don't know how old I was, probably 3 or 4, was as concerned enough to write Dr. Johnson, and in the course of their writings to insist that he write an open letter to parents. So partially I got in on that, and that was the beginning of my family's association, actually, with therapy. As a teenager in the Seattle area, I had a therapist that taught me the figure eight. And I don't know if I can describe the whole thing up here, but at 12 or 13 years old, this figure eight thing I would do with her every Saturday in the morning. I missed every cartoon as a teenager, you know, I couldn't stay home for that. Anyway, if you've seen these things about the figure eight, you know that you gradually make them large and then you make them small. Then you go like that. And then finally you go like this. I can't show it up here anyway. It just looks pretty strange. I would rather have a block than walk around with my finger in my pocket like that. I received a number of years of therapy from Shady Trails Camp here in Michigan. I know I'm in Illinois now. And there I learned a number of techniques. At that time in 1962 and in 65, we were doing lighting, blending, phrasing, everything. It was the only place I'd ever been in my life where stutterers outnumbered you fluent people. And there was a certain amount of therapy just in that, really. Then I returned there in 69 as a speech clinician. Dr. Tave Prinz didn't quite know what to do when I came back. I wasn't fluent. I was, at that time, I had earned a BA in college in Central Washington State College, under a man named Phil Wensley, that an awful lot of you know. And I was working very hard at things like pullouts, preformations, prolongations, these kinds of things. And it was an effort. Everything was an effort. And this is the way I attacked stuttering, as a matter of fact. This was quite an effortful thing. Through all that time, I was never particularly satisfied with how I sounded. Because everything, if it was on the phone, it was, hello, that kind of thing. Somebody would say, hello back, and I'd go, well, you know, like, you know, trying to work on it, and you get somebody that mimics it. So, through my master's degree, that was the way I was speaking, and into my PhD work, that's the way I was speaking. But I was ready, and I was counseled out of the field of speech therapy at every turn, at the BA, at the MA, at the beginning of the PhD, but I stuck with it. And I heard a man lecture in Boulder, a man named Schwartz. I was kind of angry at his lecture. He came on very fluently, he doesn't stutter, but very dynamically about a certain thing that overnight or within a week's time that he would then be fluent. And my wife and I were there, and I argued with him. I don't know that I have a tense larynx or whatever. But about a month later, after we talked a lot, I decided, I think I'll try that therapy. I'll try that approach. Why not? What do we have to lose, really? And I was quite ready. I was in through my written comprehensives and looking towards a long time of writing a dissertation, which I'm still writing. And I figured I needed a job, so I should be able to talk. At least talk without as much effort as I had been. So I had this therapy from Martin in Denver, and I was under the impression at the beginning of this sort of thing that after I would mention airflow to a group like this, maybe they'd never ever talk to me again. I don't know if they're going to or not, but I think some of them will. It was like an allegiance thing. I was trained under a man who was trained under Ben Reiper. I was associated with other dinosaurs, if you will. And so this new thing was kind of an allegiance. It was typical for both my wife and I to approach. Well, the passive flow is not a very difficult thing to do. We all do it. We all do it when we sleep. I've probably had more practice at passive flowing than I have at active breathing. So that wasn't such a magic. But turning it into an habitual thing, I'm still doing that. This speech, when you have 5 months to anticipate, when you have 3.5 hours to go down alphabetically, I'm surprised I'm standing up, let alone passively flowing. This, to me, has meant two things. Where my speech now, and as where I perceive my listeners understanding me, is much more intelligible. From there, and I think when I was ready, as Fred was mentioning, and bright and prepared to, hey, I've given up claiming my grandmother, I've given up trying to see which side of my head's dominant, I've given up swinging my arm, and I was ready to start talking. And this has to happen, too. I don't think it can just be something like the laying on of hands. But these two things, this intelligibility of, even when I was using pull-outs, free formations, prolongations, whatever, I would get nods of approval around the clinic. I would get nods of approval at the state conventions. Hey, Phil, he's really working on his speech. Good. But I'd go down and order gas, you know, and I'd say, fill it up with regular. And the guy, you know, that he would smirk or laugh, just like you're doing. So that, to me, wasn't where I wanted to be. They only hold the conventions once a year. You can't just get your kicks there. Another one, the other area, is this freedom. We heard a little of this earlier. The freedom from right now, the freedom from this fear of struggle and what that struggle is going to turn into. What will I look like when I have that struggle? What will that grow into? I've had blocks that I've shaken my head back so hard I've dislocated something and laid up in bed. This has happened often, or within prior to 3 years ago. I've had blocks where I've bit my tongue, where I've bitten my cheek, where this, not only what this block's going to turn into, is
what I'm, what
I have some freedom of, but fear of, the freedom of hurting myself.
And you'd never know it. Our clients can learn that quite easily. I could be squeezing my toes until they want to drop. I'm not. You just have to take my word for it. I'm not going to take my cowboy boots off. But you don't want me to. So this freedom from pain is a factor. Another one that impossibly this was the way I was approaching a number of my therapies. I was thinking, well, if I can't do a pull-out, I'll do a pre-formation, or I'll do a prolongation, or then if everything else fails, I'll cancel it. And just a number of decisions. Fine, if I'm going to say a word and I'm going to be fluent, I don't have to make any decisions. But if I'm going to say a word and I see a red light, uh-oh, there's five things I got to do now. Which one? Boom, boom, boom. And I was constantly trying to make those kinds of decisions. And I think we, as clinicians, maybe give or approach things if we start to think about techniques so that our clients think that, okay, there's 10 things I have to do, or there's things I have to do here in order to work on my speech, in order to control this thing. And I think our approach in just labeling these things possibly is a misconception to our clients. Basically, this therapy, and I'm not just talking about airflow, I'm also including an awful lot of what we've heard prior to my talk, but getting into the person, getting into knowing him, and getting in so that he knows himself, and this sort of thing, and getting into the counseling. These are all aspects, this should all be aspects of our therapy. But to me, I now am at a spot where I have a freedom to speak here, a freedom to be myself, not to be the way Dan Riper would have liked me. And I was under that threat for a long time, and I think that's easy to be under. Is this good enough yet? Is this enough control yet? I don't do that. I want to be proud of how I'm speaking. And that's where this recovery actually has put me. I wondered if other people, less motivated than myself, could pick this up. And I guess it's a little ad. Anyway, I have a stuttering camp in Colorado, and it's only in its second year now. And I was, well, with some clinicians that were also helping me and my wife, we were able to transfer this. Only in a 1 week time at the camp, plus having their clinicians follow them home. It is definitely an intensive therapy. I think that's the best way to approach it. And we've heard others mention about intensity is maybe catching on. I hope we can get the public school administrators to think about intensity. If a kid can't ask a question in a class, and if he can't socialize, and if he's the class pest, and all the rest of this, who cares if he knows where France is? I mean, he could be out of there the whole week and have him learn France some other time. And I think that whatever the approach, I think the intensity things do, or the intensified approach does work.